Coming up next, I'm going to share with you the number one hack for making better decisions. And then a recruiter is being blasted for a lowball offer. We'll break it down. And then unbelievable job titles and what they pay. Plus your calls. Here we go. All right, folks, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where we help you win at work and in life, help you make more money, experience more meaning. I am brought to you today by Vineyard Vines. Vineyard Vines is sponsoring me today in the outfit for the show. No, folks, I am in spring golf attire because it is oh, beautiful here today. All right, what's the number one hack for making better decisions? I mean, if you think about this, think about how much stress are involved in making decisions. Big decisions, small decisions, complex decisions, simple decisions. If you think about it, we burn so many mental calories making decisions. And I'm excited to give you a very simple hack. Now, you're going to have to learn how to trust this. This is not going to be as simple as me teaching this today and then all of a sudden you get it. What you are going to have to do is practice it, and it's easy to do, but it is hard to make it a habit because you're going to have to really use the word trust. Here we go. So I've been reading a book off and on because it's it's heavy. Okay, and I've told you folks, if you're new to the program, I struggle in math and science. That part of my brain is largely dormant. So when I read science books, I have to take my time with it. I can't just motor through it. So a couple years ago, I love to go to bookstores, and I was in a bookstore, and I was in the self-help area, and I was just truly browsing. Like, what's here? And I saw a book entitled The Secret Life of the Mind. And it was face out on the shelf, so it really caught my attention. So I picked it up, and it's written by Mariano Sigma. The Secret Life of the Mind. And it is a deep dive into how our mind works. There's the brain, which is the muscle, if you will. But the mind is a whole nother deal. So the brain, the mind, and I'm fascinated by how that works. All right, so anyway. I was reading in this, and I came across a chapter on decision-making. And the concept of is, I have a gut feeling, is that some mythical, mystical thing that we've kind of made popular? Is there anything to it? Or is it just something we humans say? Well, I just trusted my gut. I had a gut feeling. By the way, have you ever heard anybody use that phrase, setting up a horrible decision? Control room, have you? Head nods will do. You have? You've had somebody say, I had a gut feeling and it turned into something awful? I haven't. We had one head nod. I've never heard it. Because most of the time when we set that up, you know, I had a gut feeling, I trusted my gut. I'll allow that sometimes your gut's wrong. But most of the time, if you think about this, when somebody says that, they are explaining a phenomenon in their mind. They're like, I didn't have some clear conclusion, but I trusted my gut. That's when we most hear it. All right. So Mariano Sigma, in this book, The Secret Life of the Mind, he takes on this idea of a gut feeling. And he says, is the gut a mythical, lucky conclusion? Or is it as reliable as us using our logic and our brain? So he dives in. So there's two types of decisions that he breaks down. You've got rational decisions. We can put an argument behind them, right? We can say A plus B clearly equals C. 2 + 2 = 4. It's rational. We can explain it. We can give evidence. And then there is this idea of the gut, the hunch. I just have a feeling. Now, down here in the South, you'll hear people say, I got a feeling. And it's about a three-syllable word, depending on where in the South you're from. Well, it's not a two- or three-syllable word. It is I have a sense. It's really a sense. And we're going to break down where the sense comes from. So Sigmund references a study where he and his colleague, Maria Julia Leon, who is a neuroscientist and international chess master, they carried out an experiment. And here's what they did. They had two chess masters playing a game of chess. These are very smart, logical. Think about this. Think about the type of people they're testing. And during a match, they would monitor their heart rates. They had heart rate monitors on, just like an athlete would on a stress test. And they had some conclusions. One was that as the match got closer, where somebody's trying to survive and somebody's obviously trying to make that death knell, you know, boom, we're going to strike and kill, checkmate. They assumed that the heart rate would spike in those moments. One from survival, one from triumph. What they didn't know, let me read this portion. Listen to this. The most significant discovery we made was this. A few seconds before the players made a mistake, their heart rate changed. This means that in a situation with countless options, focus on this. We're talking a myriad of options, a ton of options, several options. In a situation with countless options, with a complexity that is similar to that of life itself, the heart panics before making a bad decision. If the players would have been able to recognize that, if the players were able to listen to what their hearts are telling them, they could have perhaps avoided many of their errors. Whoa! I mean, is anybody else as excited about that as I am? Probably not. I get it. What do we take from this? More studies. When problems are simple, these are other studies that backed up their studies. When problems are simple, here's our big takeaway. When problems are simple, doesn't necessarily mean a small problem. It means it's a simple problem. With few solutions, take your time. When you have only a few solutions, that's where we want to sit and we want to ponder and we want to really take our time and look at, let's say, option A, B, and C. And we got to really play this out. However, when the problems are complex with different solutions, the phrase trust your gut is really trust your heart. Let me say it a different way. It's trust your body. Let's go back to the study. Grandmaster chess players, brilliant logical thinkers, are presented with multiple options. And when they were about to make a move, they've already made the mental decision. Think of it. They've made the mental decision somewhere in the grabbing the chess piece and moving it, which was an incorrect move. Their heart panicked. And it was the brain telling the heart and the heart trying to tell the body, whoa, slow your roll. Slow your roll. So when you are in complex decisions, whether it be in your family life, your work life, leading people, listen to your body. Then slow down before you make the choice. Oh, there's so much here. All right, coming back, I'm going to dive into two really interesting stories. One, a recruiter paid less and got crushed for it. That's up next. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. Thrilled to have you with us as we're talking about how to win at work and in life. And, you know, we're talking about the number one hack for making better decisions. It is to listen to your gut. In other words, listen to your body. Your body will warn you when you're about to make a bad decision. Nathan, our director, told me during the break that a Stanford study showed that grandmaster chess players spend up to 6,000 calories a day, and they're sitting down. But you talk about the mental focus, the mental exertion, focus and exertion. I mean, a, I've never been a doctor. I've played one on TV, but I'm going to pull out of that study that's got to be the focus part, all right? The discipline and then the exertion, you know, making decisions after contemplating decisions, 6,000 calories. Which leads me to say that could be a really great exercise weight loss program, but golly day, what would equal a chess match? You know, you got to kind of figure that one out. Boy, Ken's really wasting away. What's happening? Well, he's concentrating for 5 to 7 hours a day. He's lost all of his personal skills. He babbles a lot, but boy, he has really thinned up. Fascinating. 844-747-2577. We'll get to your calls in a little bit. But first, couple of big headlines I want to break into. Let's go. It's time for In the News. All right, first, I want to get to the shorter story. And by the way, for those who listen via SiriusXM, I know that people listen live, and I know that people listen later. And I was driving to the office today, and I have SiriusXM in my car because I'm blessed to be a SiriusXM show. And I flipped it over to the business channel where they replay us in the mornings. And I heard yesterday's show, Alex. It was a little weird. I can only do it for about a minute. It's just creepy. Listening to yourself while you're in the car, it's creepy for me. But I was reminded that one of the callers, she started off by saying, it was our last caller. She said, I really love the show. Specifically, I love when you do the paper thing. And I like your In the News bumper. So Nathan, I am now coming out of In the News going forward. As we get into our first article, I'm going to do the paper thing. Because, you know, some people love it. For those of you that hate it, get over it. Microsoft is telling workers to return to the office. Will employees want to come back? What do we make of this? Okay. This is a statement from Microsoft. Our approach to hybrid work schedule embraces schedule flexibility, as is the standard for most roles, and provides employees with the opportunity to determine how and where they work best while making sure that the individual's plans align to the team's agreements set with the manager. So again, this is very responsible. Hybrid work model, if you're not familiar with the term, working some remote, working some in the office. They're letting the individual managers and teams figure out their mode of operation there. Now, here's the takeaway and why we share this article. When you've got companies as big as Microsoft, who were one of the first to bring everybody home and be widely remote, when they're now saying, we want people back in the office, we're okay to do it from a hybrid model, so it's not all the time, all 5 days of the week, but I'm telling you, you're going to see other major companies start to push this way. I think there are a lot of people that are still holding out and going, I'm never going back. And you know what? Good on you if you can find it, but I just think you're going to see a trend. I've always believed, I'm never going to stop believing, that culture is better when people are in the room together. So hybrid models, I do think, are the future, and I think that's going to be the predominant mode for companies as we move forward. It's still not the predominant mode, but I do believe that's where we're headed. But I'm telling you, if I'm a leader, I don't want to lose gathering together. Whatever that means for you, you take that and run with it, all right? Okay, next story, and I wanted to save most of our time for this because, boy, is this a hot-button issue. Headline, that's what she asked for. Recruiter blasted online for offering a candidate, listen to this, $85,000 salary despite having a hiring budget for that position of $130,000. Now, how did this come about? A recruiter received outrage online after sharing a LinkedIn post. Let's put it up on the screen and let you see it. For those of you that are watching, for those that are listening, I'll read it. I just offered a candidate $85,000 for a job that had a budget of $130,000. I offered her that because that's what she asked for, and I personally don't have the bandwidth to give lessons on salary negotiation. A little pucker factor on that paragraph. I'll come back to that one. She goes on. Here's the lesson. Then she goes in all caps. That's a pucker factor. I'll come back to that as well. always ask for the salary you want. And then she goes into parentheses, or deserve. No matter how large you think it might be, you never know how much money a company has to work with. And then she finishes the post, hashtag be confident. Now, I'm going to break this down because a lot of people, as we do in 2022, turn into keyboard warriors and throw verbal spears at people. So she got crushed. She got crushed. People coming after her. I'm going to go back to the post, Alex and Nathan. I'm going to go back to her initial post and break this down. But let's go to a largely popular response. Let's throw that up on the screen. Somebody else comes at her. Had a junior software engineer ask for a very low salary range. She will be shocked when this offer comes through. We are paying your worth over here. So this is another recruiter or maybe a hiring manager kind of going, all right, this is what we do. This is what I think is right. So people came after this recruiter big time. And I'm not going to get into the tennis match that happened because then she kind of apologized. She went on to say, what I was trying to help people understand is teach from this, but maybe I should have just kept it in the industry. Let's put up the original post. Okay. Now, a couple things. The second paragraph, I offered her that because that's what she asked for. I personally don't have the bandwidth to give lessons on salary negotiation. Now, let me just address this. First of all, this all went south when she added in, that's what she asked for, and then I don't have time to give lessons on salary negotiation. That's smarmy. I get it, what she's saying. She didn't need to say that. That paragraph didn't even need to be in there. Okay. Here's the lesson. Always ask for the salary you want, deserve. She did that in all caps. Do you know what all caps means on social media and emails? Do you know what it's turned into? That you're yelling. You know, it just is. By the way, I've done that a few times, right? You think, oh, this is I'm typing for emphasis. Well, it's turned into yelling. And folks, we live in the most sensitive time in history. Snowflakes can get offended for something that you didn't even come close to implying. People get offended now for things that don't even make sense. So you got to be aware of this. I'm just teaching. Little extra nod here. Careful on the all caps is the point I'm making. Now, let's get back to the guts. Do I think Mercedes and her company, are they bad people because they offered $85,000 for a job that they had a budget for $130,000? Do I think they're evil? No, I do not. Do I think that the lesson that she's trying to teach is valuable? Yes, I do. She's right. As a potential candidate, you got to do your homework on what the market bears. And if you want $85,000, ask for $105,000. Because the point she's making is you don't know what they're offering. So never lowball a company. Because companies aren't evil if they give you what you want. It's like your kid asking for a gift for Christmas and you give it to them and then they go, well, I would have liked something else. Then ask for it, you dolt. Come on, folks. Use your brain. Don't move. More calls coming up. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. We are helping you increase your income, but also increase your impact. Here's what I know about humans. No matter what they believe, where they're from, what color of their skin, who they love, I'm going to tell you, it doesn't matter. All of us want to make a difference in this world. And I'm here to tell you that you should be, not just could be, you should be making a meaningful contribution to the world in your work. That's what I'm talking about when I say I want you to get more money out of your job and experience more meaning. Let's go. We're going to help you. We're going to get to the phones in just a second. One of the ways you got to do that is you got to find the right gig that's in your sweet spot, as I call, using your talent, what you do best, to perform your passion, work you love, to accomplish your mission, produce results that matter to you. You got to find those gigs. And then, is it the right culture? There's been a lot of buzz lately about Phil from ZipRecruiter, and Phil is getting a lot of thank yous. A lot of people are on the internet saying things like Liliana, who said, super thankful for Phil at ZipRecruiter. He made my whole job search a lot easier, and he helped me land the job. That Phil sounds like somebody you want in your corner, especially for an easier job search. Oh, by the way, did you know ZipRecruiter's free? So what job can Phil help you discover? Find out, ZipRecruiter.com. That's ZipRecruiter.com. Real quick in the chat room here on YouTube. Those of you who listen, you can also watch the show live or later on YouTube. But listen, can I warn you? Some of you only know me by listening to me. So please be prepared to be disappointed when you see me in real life. Now today, I'll be honest with you, I've got my golf attire on and I'm rocking the Vineyard Vines look. So I feel very preppy today. So that might irritate some of you. It might entertain some of you. But hey, team, can we help out Daniel Mutter in the chat room? He typed in, I'm curious how I can get into our project management training. This is a new course that we've cut off application, but I want the team to know that Daniel reached out, and I'd like Daniel to have a shot if it's not already closed. This is the new project management training course that Ramsey Solutions is offering, because you don't need a college degree to be a successful project manager. Yours truly, minus the Vineyard Vines attire, and our chief technology officer, Brenda Wojcko, are teaching this course. It's a great course, very affordable. So can we send him a link? Yes. Okay, good. It's on the screen. Oh, it's on the screen. Oh, thank you, guys. You guys are amazing. Look at that. There it is. RamseySolutions.com/project. RamseySolutions.com/project. Great job, Nathan. All right. I'm going to come back to the chat room in a bit because there's some good stuff here. Chara P is trying to get through. All right. We're working on that, too. Be patient. If you don't get through, keep calling, email the show. We'll try to schedule on the show. Okay, Jessica is joining us first in Austin, Texas. Jessica, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, Ken. Thank you so much for taking my call and all the great advice that you give. You've been super helpful.
Well, thank you. How can I help you today?
Yes, recently I resigned from my position of 4 years, and the main reason was due to a toxic work environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm back out there, I'm applying and I'm interviewing. Last week, I had an interview where they asked me why I resigned. I was ready with all my standard answers I had practiced. Company culture shift didn't align with my core values. But unexpectedly, the interviewer kind of pressed more. He was like, huh, you know, you were there for 4 years. That's surprising that you decided to resign. Anything in particular? And that is when I froze.
Yeah.
And I just started scrambling, thinking like, we were in this new program and we weren't very supported. And I was just like scrambling for these answers. And I was completely caught off guard. So yep. I would really love to know in the future when a future employer during an interview presses me for details, how do I handle that? Because you can't exactly say like, oh, came from a toxic work environment, because I would not want to speak ill of my former employer, nor that wouldn't look so great on me, because they'd be like, okay, yeah, what really happened? So any advice would be greatly appreciated.
Well, first of all, I'm proud of you for acknowledging what you just said, and I hope everybody else heard what Jessica said. She wants to take the high road, but still answer the question, and that's the right strategy. Because if you just, you know, lay out the former leadership, it makes them go, gee whiz, is she going to be like that to us? And it doesn't serve you well. So you're absolutely, your instincts are right. So here's the thing. You have to practice this answer. You have to expect that somebody's going to say, why did you leave your former company? And so you have to rehearse that. I think the reason you froze is because A, you hadn't really rehearsed it. You weren't clear on where you would go, how you would take the high road. What does the high road look like? Am I right? Mm-hmm. You didn't really practice that?
Exactly. That is so true.
So you only froze because you hadn't practiced it, not because you're not capable of giving a great answer. That's what I want you to hear.
course. Correct.
So here's the deal. There's a phrase that I've shared on this show and on social media many times. Relentless preparation leads to reflexive performance. Relentless preparation leads to reflexive performance. If you've ever seen an athlete perform under pressure, like a quarterback with no timeouts and a minute and a half to go, you know what I'm talking about, Jessica?
I do, absolutely.
How do they do that? Is it that they are just this uncanny, unbelievable talent that very few people represent in this world? No, they are talented, but they have practiced that two-minute drill. They've watched film. They know what plays they're calling. They've drilled every day on how to move the ball down the field quickly with no timeouts. They know exactly what to do, and instinct takes over. So all that to say, this is as simple as you preparing how you would answer that. And literally, practice saying it in your phone. Practice saying it in the mirror. Whatever works for you, write it down 17,000 times until you get it. The point is you, when the question comes, your brain is relaxed because your brain has thought through this before. Your brain is a supercomputer and the answers have already been loaded in. And then your brain will perform even under pressure. You'll get 75% of it out and that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to go, you're going to take the high road, but you're going to tell them what's going on. Here's why I left. And here's the other thing. It is possible. I'm going to give you some tips on an answer. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
It is possible for you to focus more on why you're interviewing for them in that answer and to go positive and go, well, here's the deal. And you can use my talent, passion, mission as a clue. Well, here's the deal. I begin to look at companies like you and specifically a job with a company like yours because I love this work and I care a lot about this result. And I've also heard really good things about this company and its culture. And so I didn't leave because of so many egregious things or anything really, really bad or horrible. I left because I knew there was more and I knew there were better cultures and better opportunities to do the work I love. And that's how I got here today.
Absolutely.
How does that?
Really good.
Yeah. So now we're not griping about the last company. And trying to dance around the negatives, what we're doing is going, I didn't leave so much because of what was happening. I left because of what I was wanting. And you all have that. That makes them feel good. And it's still the truth, by the way.
I love that. That's a great answer.
Okay, great. All right. Well, we're going to take the rest of the show off. I feel like I've done everything I could do. No, I'm kidding, Jessica. Hey, you're awesome. Hey, hang on the line. I want to give you a free resource. Can we make sure she gets a link to kencoleman.com? I'm not sure what the backslash is, but we have a free guide for you all. And it's called How to Win the Interview. It's a PDF, and it's absolutely free. It's at kencoleman.com, and it breaks it all down, okay? So if you go to kencoleman.com, and I think it's under resources, it's free, but I'm going to put you on hold. The team will get you there. And for the rest of you, kencoleman.com, and you can type in how to win the interview. And this is a free resource that'll prepare you, walk you through all the steps in preparation to win the interview. Okay, don't go anywhere. More of your calls coming up. All right, folks, welcome back to the Kent Coleman Show, where we help you make more money and experience great meaning in your work. Life is too short to spend all of that time you spend at work and not be fulfilled. And it's possible. I want you all to get promoted, get that dream gig, which will help you, by the way, live out your other dreams. Coming up next. Oh my gosh, this is a new segment for us. It's very popular. I will also tell you it's my favorite segment. It is called Unbelievable Job Titles and What They Pay. These are real jobs. They're hilarious in some cases, obnoxious in others. But it is a wonderful reminder that there is work out there for everybody, work that you love. You won't believe today's. I can't wait to get to it. It's really great. So that's coming up. But first, back to the phones. Jocelyn in Gainesville, Florida. Jocelyn, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's up?
I have three kids. My oldest is 15 years old. Uh-huh. He's a freshman in high school. And I realize the next 3 years are going to fly by.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be expected to find the right college, declare a major or his career path. But I don't really feel like the kids have very much exposure to what's really available in terms
Amen.
Of careers.
Amen.
So I struggled with it myself.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering if there is some suggestions that you would have for yep. me to help help him try to learn about different careers,
yep.
the options that are out there with his passions.
Yes. All right,
first thing. Just wanted some direction.
Yes, ma'am. Here we go. This is like teeing me up to be an evangelist, all right? This is like my number one thing. How do you help your 15-year-old? You said it. You said in a few years he's going to be expected to pick a good college and a good major. You can change that. Who is expecting him to do that? Tell him to shut up. And if that's you and your husband, tell yourselves to shut up. This is what's killing so much of the imagination that is necessary for kids to get inspiration. Because we parents have bought into the cultural lie and the cultural pressure. Notice I said we, because I was victim of this for a while. And then as I figured all this out for myself, I said, never again. We need to remove the pressure right now and next year and the next year and the next year for your kid to pick the right college and the right major. Those are not the right choices. What he needs to be choosing, what he needs to be figuring out, he needs to be choosing the right path for him based on figuring out what is it that he thinks that he would love to do. And so I'm okay with a get clear year. I'm going to stop calling it the gap year. Gap is okay. Negative. Let's call it a get clear year if that's what he needs. I'm not saying he needs it. But what he needs to be doing right now as a 15-year-old is for summer jobs and winter break jobs or whatever time or nighttime jobs, two nights a week or a weekend job, he needs to be trying and shadowing. If he can get a gig where he's paid working at the absolute bottom of the barrel as a youngster, working for somebody. Let's say he was interested in construction. I'd get him out on a construction site. I'd find a good contractor
okay.
who you all know through a friend of a friend or you know directly and let him shadow that contractor. Get the guy's coffee.
He's very passionate about music.
Then I would get him in that space.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to give you a copy. I'm going to give you two books today for him, okay?
Great.
One is The Proximity Principle, which is a deep dive into Get Connected, which is the third of seven stages that will allow anybody, including your son, to discover and do what they were born to do. Okay?
Okay.
And then I'm going to give you my latest book, From Paycheck to Purpose, which is the seven stages, unpacked. Get clear, get qualified, get connected, get started, get promoted, get the dream job, give yourself away. I'm going to give you both books. What I want you to do is first read The Proximity Principle, and then go over it with him. If he's a reader or he listens to audiobooks, we'll get you that format. But I want you to first focus on what is the stuff that he think he, the kind of gigs that right now as a 15-year-old, he would at least say, I wonder about this sometimes. I think right now this would be awesome if I got paid to do this. And now let's use The Proximity Principle to get him around those people. The Proximity Principle says in order to do what I want to do, I got to be around people that are doing it and in places where it's happening. I want you to focus on that first. Then as the parent, I want you to read From Paycheck to Purpose to get a picture of what the journey's like and what you're going to guide him on. Stay on the line. We're going to give you whatever format you want of The Proximity Principle and From Paycheck to Purpose. Coming up next, unbelievable job titles and what they pay. My. What a great day to get hired. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, where we help you make more money and experience more meaning. That simple. All right, you're not going to believe this. Here's our next installment of unbelievable jobs and what they pay. I get so irritated when I hear people go, I just can't find work that I enjoy, and I don't know how in the world I'd find it. We do this segment not just to entertain you, but we do this segment to encourage and equip you. There is a job for anybody. I'm just telling you. Just like I don't believe that you can go through life and truly not find somebody that you could love or that could love you, no matter how ugly you are. I just believe it's somebody for beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Somebody said that a long time ago, and I think it's right. All right. First job. This is the title, and then I'll tell you what it is, what the qualifications are, and how much it pays. Technical evangelist. Boy, I tell you what. A tech evangelist raises awareness and generates credibility for a specific product or service. Steve Jobs is an example. If you think about it, Steve Jobs was involved in some of the ideas, but it was Wozniak, right? In the early days, in the garage, Jobs' parents' garage. And then here he is, there's an image on the screen, you know, in the classic black turtleneck and denim, and he would come out and he became famous for unveiling the latest product or update and all these kind of things. And that became really, if you think about it, his full-time gig as the CEO. He was a tech evangelist. He raised awareness. So now this is an actual job. What do you need? Certifications, education, just tech-related work experience. Maybe some social media experience. Maybe a social media platform we could add to that. Necessary skills, public speaking, communication, and being creative. So what does a technical evangelist pay in today's world? $120,000 a year. This is an average. So you got much higher than that and lower than that. Glassdoor.com, the site. Citing the resource there. Next. Now, this is my personal favorite. Because I grew up, I'm 47, be 48 this year. I grew up in the world of the wet banana. Joe, do you remember the wet banana? I feel like you, Amanda's not here today. The wet banana was an actual product. And it was basically a glorified trash bag that was yellow, and the sprinkler was a banana.
I don't remember it.
And you would just put the sprinkler in the shape of a banana on the end of the hose. It would shoot the water on the slip and slide, but they called it the wet banana. And then you would run and yee and slide on it. So there it is, the wet banana. And I got to tell you, hours and hours of countless joy for my brother and I. This job title is the water slide tester. The water slide tester. Water slide testers check to see if the water slides are both fun and safe. Now, this one is particularly not about the wet banana in the yard. This one is more for hotels and theme parks, right? Because these are much bigger contraption than the silly little thing that came out of a box for me and my brother in the 80s. This is serious business right here. I mean, look at that. I went to the Bahamas, the Atlantis, which is a world famous and world class resort. And this thing, I want to say, is over 70, 80 feet in the air. Someone will correct me, I'm sure. But when you go down the slide, you are going down in this tube and you're hurtling. And they have sharks in the water around you. So you're in the tube and safe, but the tube's in the water. You're completely surrounded by the tube. But sharks, hammerhead sharks, as you stand at the top, you're like going down the slide into what looks like a pool of hammerhead sharks. It's fascinating. Somebody had to test that. What does that pay? Because there's no requirements. It's entry level, baby. You got to be a daredevil. You got to be able to handle the physical duress. Entry level, $14 an hour. This is according to HawaiiBusiness.com. All right, the next one, penguinologist. Yes, folks, that's exactly what I said. Penguinologist. While not a scientific term, this was revealed on a BBC News interview in 2011. This is a marine biologist, zookeeper, or even an ornithologist. Ornithology is the study of birds with a specific focus on penguins, typically employed by zoos, aquariums, wildlife parks, or labs. What do you need for this? Certification education is a degree in a related field that we just mentioned, leaning towards becoming a zoologist. And some high-level research posts may require postgraduate qualification if you're doing research. This is according to read.co.uk. Necessary skills, observation, and communication skills pay. Now here's the deal. You would think the pay for this might be pretty high. It's $51,000 a year to be a penguinologist. You better love some freaking penguins. I mean, you know what I mean? If that's your jam, then I'm okay with that. All kinds of different penguins. So there you go. All right, let's get to the chat room. Very active chat room over on our YouTube page. Search the Ken Coleman Show for our listening audience if you'd like to watch the show. Don't be too disappointed when you see me in real life. Although today, as I pointed out, I'm very happy with my Vineyard Vines golf-themed outfit today. I must tell you, spring is in the air. I'm very excited. Norma Gerardo said, say it louder, Ken. I don't know what I was supposed to say louder, but thank you, Norma. The team would like me to not say things quite as loud at times. R. Vegas says, I love the slip and slide. Got hurt on it several times. Well, thank you very much. All right. Diana C., I am a registered nurse, but I want to become a newborn photographer. Do you have any advice on what my first step should be? I know it's going to be a pay cut, but I want to be able to make my own schedule. Okay. This is a really interesting question, very nuanced. Diana, if you can absorb the pay cut, then I'm fine with this. If not, I'd rather you do this on the side, because I don't think you're just going to announce to your local zip code in the world that you are a newborn photographer and all of a sudden you're going to be deluged with opportunities. This is going to have to be we build this business. So if you don't need the income, great. If you need the income, don't make this huge jump and sacrifice. Let's start doing this on the side. But it feels like maybe you have it, so let's go. What's your first step? You need to find some friends and family who are willing to let you take pictures of their newborn. And you need to be willing to do it for free so that you can begin to create a portfolio. So let's say you take pictures of 3 or 4 newborns in the next 2 to 3 months. I would post those everywhere. Spread the word. Put a portfolio together. Do a really darn good job. When you make those parents happy by letting their little baby look beautiful, which, by the way, can we all admit not every baby is cute? So you better do a good job, because people are going to be looking at this stuff. And so as parents get excited about it and as their friends and family like the pictures, your business will build. VV Superwolf. Ken, I'm going to meet my bosses, my VP and senior director, this coming Monday. This is the first time I will meet them. How can I impress them? I have recently been trying to get promoted to be the procurement manager. Okay, so VV Superwolf. Number one, don't refer to yourself as Superwolf at any time in the meeting. Let's put the obvious out there. Oh, I kid. It's a great username. Here's what you don't do. When trying to impress somebody, you shouldn't try to impress somebody. We've all seen these romantic comedies, maybe. This is what's coming to my mind, where the guy's trying too hard and he's all worked up to impress the girl and he ends up making a buffoon of himself. This is true of all humans. When we geek ourselves up, we get all, you know, oh, this is my first time and I'm going to get to meet him, and we try too hard, a couple things happen. Sometimes when we try too hard, we lock up, right? We lock up. And we end up doing or saying something that's just, oh boy, it's cringeola, baby. Or we just look like a cheesy butt kisser. Don't try to impress them. Be your best self. That's it. Don't go overboard. Don't try to say something. Look a certain way. Be you, the best version of you. And let the chips fall where they may. Appreciate the stuff here. Okay, for our listening audience, I got to get out of here. You matter. You have what it takes. For our viewing audience, stay tuned. We've got extra calls coming your way. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Press on.
Thanks for listening to the Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following at Ken Coleman.
If you enjoyed this podcast, we have more from the Ramsey Network, like Borrowed Future.
Hey, listeners, I'm George Camel, and in this 8-episode podcast series, we're exploring the student loan debt crisis and the impact it's having on real people. We're going to expose the predatory nature of the student loan industry, how we got here, why student loans are such a big deal, and what can be done to avoid them in the first place. We'll hear stories of people burdened by student loan debt and be inspired by people who graduated college debt-free. We'll also hear from experts and thought leaders along the way.
To hear full episodes, just search Borrowed Future wherever you listen to podcasts or go to borrowedfuture.com.